You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You push play and they'll push the limits.
It's your boy time here and we are back with another episode of the Cinnamon. The boys decided to leave the country and leave time by his lonesome. So you know what? Today we're gonna do a Time and Friends podcast. So here I have with me Big Gene, aka Mr. NC State, and then Theroux. Y'all seen Theroux on here a couple times already, but we had to call him. Look at Big Gene. He's got the specialized cap, personalized NC State. You know what? Let's just go ahead and start there, Gene. Like, go ahead and get your gloating out of the way. How's it feel to finally be respectable at basketball in your lifetime?
I'm not one of those hard on Sandrews is actually, I'm not going to crap on Sandrews because he's a pretty classy UNC fan, but you know, there are some UNC fans that, you know, they always get giddy out of any time something bad happens to State, but now I think we can put the haters to rest. And I do have a bit more to add to State's current run, but I'll allow Stan. I want Stan Drews to go ahead and introduce himself to the world.
Quite frankly, just call it what it is, right? Like, NC State in basketball. I mean, well, really, the three major sports in general have they've just fallen on some pretty tough times. Like, they've just been maybe middle of the road at best. And their fan base is super passionate. Like, that's just something as a longtime Carolina fan that I have noticed, and you just can't really run from it, is that they are just super, super invested. And while I do feel the fan base as a whole, they really are a wolf pack, and that they just say a bunch of shit they probably shouldn't say. They get sideways a lot of the times. But the fact of how much they love their team is kind of undeniable. So for my friends and some of the people that I know and just truly love and respect, like to see them be able to just kind of enjoy something that I've gotten to see so much in my sports fandom, being a Carolina fan, it's been kind of nice for them to just have something to really kind of hold their head high about. You know, this is just it's a special accomplishment. It's not easy to do. And, you know, I just – truthfully, I don't want them to win. I will never pull for them. But, however, I hope they enjoy the ride because it's truly special. And anytime you get to see your sports team that you've loved since you were a kid, you know, kind of be on the national stage, it's a fun thing to be a part of. And I just hope they enjoy it.
And I was stepping in there real quickly. Hold on, Big Jane, before you start up.
I got some tea to spill.
So Standrews is, for those that don't remember or aren't familiar with Standrews, he is the biggest Carolina fan I know. So I have to say, this leak called him a classy Carolina fan. I have to say, Standrews has made great strides in the past, let's say 20 years, because let's just say that it's not always been the case. But I think I'm very proud of him for how far he's come in his fandom that leads to hate for other schools. But
a lot of growth.
I'm proud of you. All right, Gene, what's your tea you got to spill, big dog?
So, yeah, the State's athletic program really has not been as top-notch in past a good while. Let's just put it like that. And if you saw Survive in Advance at the end, it mentioned the book that came out that made all the allegations about Valvano and them, you know, all those different infractions, when in reality, all that was happening was players were selling tickets. So when Valvano quit as the basketball coach, he was also the AD at the time. And he was doing pretty good because he brought in Dick Sheridan, who was, in my opinion, I'd say probably the second or third, one of the best head coaches in State football history. When Valvano got replaced as AD, they brought in, a lot of people will say that he was a UNC plant because he went to UNC, but in reality, I think part of it was he was just a dumb athletic director. They brought in a guy named Todd Turner, who was the AD, and a lot of old State fans I know, they knew he was not the crispiest chip in the bag, not the sharpest tool in the shed. He made, supposedly he made a lot of just dumb decisions. One of those being, actually this was told to me by one of my dad's friends, at one of his very first functions as the AD was at a Wolfpack Club luncheon or something in Rocky Mount for all the East of 95 alums and whatnot, and he showed up in a powder blue blazer, which pissed off a lot of people. And supposedly somebody pulled him aside and said, if you're going to be the AD for school, you better get rid of that goddamn jacket. And so eventually he was given the boot. Then Les Robinson, who was State's head coach, God bless him, not one of the best, he was brought in as the AD from 96 to 99. Then we got Lee Fowler, who did a damn good job. It was unfortunate when he was given the boot. I feel like he did a pretty good job. Then we got Debbie Yao, who, she rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
That's where I think in recent memory, I think it's kind of where you can really start. Cause I know from just a Carolina fan perspective, like Debbie Yao was kind of a mixed bag because there were some things she did for the athletic program that you almost felt you could be proud of. And then there was just some real head scratching decisions that were made. And, you know, just as a Carolina fan, you know, our athletic program has been pretty solid across the board, at least to the point to where you didn't feel there was a lot of turmoil. Well, with the stuff that was kind of going on at State, I know as a Carolina fan, you're kind of looking in there and you're just kind of laughing. You're like, man, thank God that's not us, that we're not having to deal with all that stuff.
I was not a fan of Godfrey.
Gene, real quick, you just jumped into a history lesson for all the people listening to the podcast. Can you – well, what you sipping on, Standrew? What you making real quick? Hold on, please.
This is just a little bit of Woodford Reserve.
A little Woodford Reserve.
You know, just a little something. You know, obviously, Carolina being out, Braves baseball season's in full swing. So, 7:40, I'll probably have another one of these and try to catch the baseball game. You know, so go Braves. But I figured if I was going to be on a podcast and openly give State its flowers, I wasn't going to do so without some local courage, because it's certainly not something that I necessarily was enjoying or looking forward to. But I think, like I said, just being a North Carolina fan, to be able to, you know, kind of, you know, be proud of little brother for once is something that I think a lot of people should kind of really just stop with the junk talking and, you know, just give State that it's due, you know.
The redheaded stepchild, as I like to call them.
right. Yeah.
Woosah, woosah.
I mean, the reality is they kind of, to get to where they are today, they had to beat North Carolina in the ACC championship.
Yep.
Before that, to get to the ACC championship, they had to beat Duke. And then to get to the Final Four, they had to beat Duke again. Not only with this run are you talking, what, 9 games in a row, you're also talking you had to beat win three games against your rivals that are really right down the road.
A lot.
So you just can't you can't scoff at that. You have to just kind of like tip your hat and say, hey, you know, it was a good run. You're playing great. And, you know, you just got to survive in advance. Can't worry about who you play. You just got to beat them, get on to the next team. And State's been able to do that.
Well, Lee, real quick, I see you holding your drink up. Why are you drinking Dr. Pepper? What's in there?
Wild cherry Pepsi from Taco Bell.
Oh, Chris, are you okay with that, Standard? Because this is the Coke man.
I was a little worried about what Lee would be drinking, because I know he has a tendency to drink cheer wine. So I was just going to make sure if we're going to have the number one basketball program fan represented, we need to have the number one soda beverage in the world
right now. Damn, so are you saying cheer wine is like the NC State of sodas? You got Coke, Pepsi, and then cheer wine.
I mean, if we're being honest, that makes a lot of sense, right? You have the number one, which is obviously the North Carolina Tar Heels. You have Pepsi, which, you know, they're kind of second rate, but, you know, they still kind of hold their own in the market. And then you've got cheer wine way, way on down the line. Similar to that of NC State, but they still have their loyal. They have
and,
their
and the people that love cheer wine love cheer wine. Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I always get Taco Bell on Tuesday because Taco Tuesday, and Taco Bell has yet to wise up and add cheer wine to their selection.
Well, Lee, you know that LeBron started Taco Tuesday, didn't you?
All right, I will not be on the LeBron podcast. Well, I'm happy to talk ACC hoops.
Yeah,
but we are not touching LeBron.
Let me get back on the rails. What I want to do, I wanted Lee. He jumped into the history lesson before I could get him to properly introduce his fandom. So, Lee, can you tell the people how long have you been a State fan? How long have you been going to games? Is this something that's in your blood, or is it you just kind of jumped on the bandwagon?
It is in my blood. I've been a State fan my entire life. I had family that went to State. I remember going back as far back as the early 90s to Carter Finley, to seeing State play back when they had the diamond logo, which out of all the logos is the GOAT logo. I remember as far back as Dick Sheridan, and then we had Mike O'Kane. And then when we got Chuck Amato, it was awesome. It was sad to see him go, but it was just time for him to go. Then we got Tom O'Brien, who I felt was decent, and Dave Doran, who is doing a damn good job now. I mean, it was rough starting out for him, but I mean,
Lee, I feel like I'm listening to a reading of the Old Testament. You just keep throwing names out at me.
And I'm happy to say that I stormed the field.
There we go.
2002, when State whooped Florida State to go to the Gator Bowl, I rushed that field. I was proud to say I was there.
For somebody to be a lifelong State fan, that is a lifelong of torture and horrendous.
I couldn't make it 36 years.
So Lee, we got to give you your props because you've been rocking with the Wolfpack for the longest.
I've developed a lot of opinions about some of the local football here. While we're talking local football, I will say State has some. We have some loyal football fans, but
you know that.
I will say that. Close up there, if not more passionate, are ECU football fans. Because for years,
I hear you, Lee. I thought we were talking hoops, buddy.
Lee's trying to drive the podcast. Look at him.
He's just trying to profess his love for NC State athletics, which we, you know, by all means, you know, I get it. You love where you love what you love, you know. My big thing is just you know, no matter if it's like, I'll call it what it is. Carolina basketball got me to be a Carolina fan. Just like maybe NC State football got Lee to be an NC State football fan.
So, or Chris, NC State basketball real quick, fan. You say that, what you know, because I tell people, it's kind of like when you grow up in North Carolina, it's kind of like you're playing Pokemon and you're like, choose your starter Pokemon. Are you going to be a Carolina fan, a Duke fan, or a State fan? So what led you to picking Squirtle as opposed to, you know, the other ones? What led you to the baby blue?
ultimately there's so many factors, right? Because you're in North Carolina and that color blue is just so unique and distinct, and it really does stand out. You know, like Duke and their royal blue, everybody's got a royal blue. NC State, red and white is the most common theme in all sports. So the Carolina blue, for one, just really popped for me. It really just stuck out for me. And if I'm just being like brutally honest, one of the big reasons I'm a Carolina fan is my grandfather, who lives in upstate New York, He remembers way back, and I'm going to be like Lee here. I'm going to go way back to the olden days in 1957 when North Carolina won the national championships against Kansas, you know, led by Wilt Chamberlain. The head coach there, Frank McGuire, is from New York. And so he got Lenny Rosenbluth and just all these boys from New York to come down to Chapel Hill to play basketball. So in the process of that, my grandfather, who is from, you know, upstate New York, that kind of became his team. It was the New York City boys that were just running up and down and dominating college basketball. So he was a huge North Carolina fan. When Frank McGuire left for the pros and Dean Smith was hired as the next coach, my grandfather just absolutely loved Dean Smith because of just the X's and O's and the way he approached the game of basketball. At the time, people just didn't look at basketball the way Dean Smith did. And so from being in North Carolina, having grown up here, because my parents moved here, my grandfather obviously was a huge North Carolina basketball fan. So it just made it easy to kind of lean that way, because in a lot of ways, I would say my family kind of pulled me in that way. And then by happenstance, about the time I really started to understand the game of basketball, you know, you had Antoine Jameson and Vince Carter at North Carolina. And those were some of my favorite teams. Well, Michael Jordan was 82. Michael Jordan obviously is my favorite basketball player of all
long
time.
Long gone before.
Yeah, but we're talking about directly with Carolina. But Michael Jordan may still be my favorite basketball player, even if I was not a Carolina fan. But we're talking about just Carolina fandom. And I think Vince Carter and Antoine Jameson they are the reasons that I became just absolutely cemented. I had the quarter zip t-shirt warm up. I've had multiple Vince Carter basketball jerseys in my life. So I mean those teams
and so much so that I'd say you obviously are one of the biggest Michael Jordan fans I know as well. But you said you want a name you've always thrown out for a child, if you have one day, is Jameson Carter.
Jameson Carter. I'm working on that with my fiance. She's bought in on Carter. She's not sold on Jameson yet. So I like to think about I'm 50% there. So just got to keep working a little bit and hopefully we can get the job done.
Hey, if I could get baby mama to let me name my child Brandon, I think you can get there because that was a miracle that happened.
Well, I think Alex is a bit more stubborn than Cynthia is. So that may be
that's a
bit more of a challenge.
That's a large hurdle right there. I don't know. maybe we can have a stubborn off one day at the wedding.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We can do that, and then me and you can go out for drinks, and we'll just let them figure out who's more stubborn.
I love it. That's a great idea.
I will say that even though I'm a hardline State fan, I will pull for Carolina when they aren't playing State, because just like Standrews, my granddad was probably, he's no longer with us, God rest his soul, he was the biggest UNC fan I ever knew. He actually went there for Naval War School for World War II, and then he actually attended college there. And he didn't need memorabilia or any kind of swag to prove his fandom. He was a loyal fan who was an encyclopedia of North Carolina sports, mainly basketball, but he was somewhat of a football fan too. And because of him, I'm a secondary UNC fan, and he was okay. Wait,
did we just get official admittance that Lee's a secondary UNC fan? I don't think I knew that.
I think we need to clip that. We need to clip that.
I pull for UNC when they aren't playing State.
Oh, that I don't know if that makes you a real State fan. I don't know if I've ever heard of that.
My dad's okay with it. My mom's okay with it.
All right. As long as Big Ed's okay with it. That's all that matters. But look, I want to get away from this ACC talk because we got people that don't even see. This is those places like people understand how I think this ACC shakeup is going to suck for us grew up in North Carolina, because we're just so used to ACC basketball. Being, you know, I've tried to describe it because people here in Texas, you know, Texas is football, 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 damn football. And so, like, I'm talking to baby mama, and I'm like, look, we got to have March Madness on all day. She's like, what are you talking about? I was like, didn't y'all sit up in the class and like have the games on during class? She's like, no, we didn't watch March Madness during class. What are you talking about? I'm like, I'm talking about, we started during the ACC tournament watching basketball on that.
Oh, rolling out the TV on the carts at 12 o'clock. At tip off. Like, I mean, those are some of the best memories in school, you know, March. Gosh, it didn't matter what you had going on. Like, I remember one time we had to take a test in one of my classes when I was in middle school, and the teacher was like, hey, we're just going to have the game on mute. So the game, you could still keep up with the score while you were sitting there taking a test. And, I mean, kids don't, they take that stuff for granted. But, you know, I remember a day where that TV come rolling in, man, you knew you were going to have a good day.
Yeah, sir, you knew that. Yeah. Or if you saw a substitute in there, that's how you knew you were about to be. But, yeah, so describing basketball and ACC to people, because the best thing I can equate to people down here is like, you know, Texas, Oklahoma. Well, yeah, it's, but I'm saying like Texas, Oklahoma is pretty big down here. I'd say that's as close to Carolina Duke as it gets, and I think it would be the same exact thing if they were as close in proximity as Carolina Duke. You know, it's pretty close. As far as, you know, where we live is in Dallas is always the hub for the Texas OU game because that's where the Cotton Bowl is. But, you know, if they were, you know, within 25, 30 minutes of each other, I can't imagine. It would probably be – I think that's what helps Carolina Duke be the best rivalry in sports. But, of course, I'm a homer, and I think that. But
because it's a 15-minute drive between the cities.
Right, exactly. But I do want to shift gears a little bit because I think we have an interesting dynamic with you two on here. And I didn't really tell you guys I want to talk about this. So, surprise, but I think you'll be all right. So, here we have, you know, on the Cinnamon Sugar, sometimes we talk wrestling. Well, here we have Big Gene, who is one of the biggest wrestling fans I know, as far as this man watches the dirt sheet wrestling. Like, the wrestlers I ain't even ever heard of. He knows.
I haven't checked AEW out much. I've been working like a dog recently. It's been hard keeping up. Plus, I have the USA app, but it won't let me live stream Raw or SmackDown. But I think it's very interesting what's going on with Cody Rhodes, The Rock, Roman Reigns, and everything.
USA needs to get his shit together. That's all I can say.
I really want Cody to win.
He does.
The only reason Roman has had the belt that long is because they're trying to book it so that he can surpass Hulk Hogan's 4-year reign. And frankly, Hulk Hogan's old news. Nobody really cares about him anymore. But it would be cool to see Cody with the belt on it because I'm a huge fan of I'm a huge fan of the Rhodes family. I mean, his good old dad, Death Dad, the American Dweeb, is one of Texas's own. Of course, Dustin Gold Dust. I mean,
I was about to say, Dusty Rhodes seems like he'd be your type of favorite wrestler, Big Gene. Is that your favorite? Who's your favorite wrestler of all time?
Oh man, don't. Oh.
Well, while you're thinking about it, think about it for a little bit. I'm going to get Chris in here for a second. Think about it. Because Andrews, here's the thing about Andrews. He's like the opposite of Lee. He was a big wrestling fan kind of back in the day growing up when everybody was a big wrestling fan. And he texted me the other day that this stuff has kind of got him tuned in. The Rock has kind of got him tuned in. So I wanted to hear his little take on what he's thought of wrestling as he thought about checking it back out. Or what's your take on going on in the wrestling world, Andrews?
Yeah, I mean, to kind of follow what you said, I mean, I was like everybody else, right? You know, you're a young kid, you got the trampoline, you got the neighborhood kids, you got the belts, you find use mom's old cookie sheets to hit each other with because it doesn't hurt. Like, man, we had our own backyard wrestling league, you know, when I was elementary school, maybe early middle school. So
Sanders, I try to tell people we used to post up the CD boombox on the outside of the porch and play interest music.
Absolutely. Like that's just kind of part of it. Like it was the best being a kid. And we would have like a draft where basically like you got to pick which wrestler you could be. And so if there was somebody you really wanted, you better pick them, because then the next person could take that wrestler. So you couldn't wrestle as that wrestler. So I just remember that as a kid, and it was just, you know, so much fun. It was the Attitude Era, you know, it was WCW versus NWO, like you name it. That was like some of the best wrestling.
Monday Night Wars
was when I was absolutely. It was just so much fun. But you know, obviously you grow up. I get more involved in, not to knock wrestling, real sports. Like my love of football and basketball really just kind of took over my life. And then, you know, as I've gotten older, I've gotten more and more into baseball, just appreciating the little dynamics of the game that I just wasn't mature enough to realize when I was a kid. But that being said, like The Rock making his casual returns here and there, just to kind of basically just, it's basically just fan service. But for him to be like an integral part of the story, I've followed The Rock on social media, just because I think the stuff he does outside of acting, I think, has always been really cool. Obviously, he's been a huge celebrity. His movies are highly entertaining, even if basically he's just playing The Rock as whoever, whatever character he wants to be. But it's been a lot of highly entertaining movies. But for him to be cutting those 15, 20 minute, you know, The Rock promos on X, formerly known as Twitter, it's been so much fun. Like, to the point where I'm very aware of what's going on in the wrestling world, and if you asked me 3 months ago, I couldn't care less what was going on.
Yeah. Well, that just proves my point. Now, Lee, did you think about who your favorite? Crispy, think about who your favorite wrestler is. I'm sure you probably got it, but
I don't have one all time favorite. I mean, it's really tough to pick. I mean.
Mount Rushmore, Lee. Name your top.
Oh, no, my Mount Rushmore is more than four, but
oh, hell, Sandrews, you're throwing too much at him.
I thought four would be pretty easy. I've got four off the top of the dome super quick.
I would definitely say Piper, Flair, Bret Hart, Austin. Let's see, Piper, Flair, Hart, Austin, Rock. That's four. I gotta say, also Dean Malenko. I mean, I think he was heavily underrated.
Yeah.
I mean,
all right. He named Dean Malenko, so we can kind of move on. I think.
Dean Malenko was a master at the craft of wrestling. I'll give you that, Lee.
Jericho. I mean, Jericho is also pretty damn good. He's still going for his age. I think he's still going pretty strong. Brian Danielson, Daniel Bryan. I'm a fan of Punk. I mean, he's not afraid to tell it like it is.
I think it's a good thing that we didn't have Gene to make Mount Rushmore, because we'd have ran out of mountain space.
Gene's already got the Appalachians working on. He's working on the Rockies now.
We might have to change Big Gene's name to CVS Receipt, because I'm talking about that man's got the list longer than a CVS receipt. Standard, what you got for your Mount Rushmore wrestlers?
All right, so I think it's to give Gene some grief. He's right. It's kind of hard to narrow it down, because you could go with who do you like watching performing, who do you like cutting promos, and who did you just overall like watching to wrestle, right? So I do kind of what I do with everything. I think who is the culmination of all of those things, and that's kind of who I go with, right? So I think as far as just what The Rock has done on the mic, like I remember as a kid, like just hating him, because he was kind of like the heel. You get a little older and you're like, bro, that guy is high quality entertainment. He's so funny. He's just a freak athlete. So I think The Rock, with everything he's done, he plays a great good guy, plays a great bad guy. He's definitely probably the tops. I think to complement that, I think you have to go with like Stone Cold, just kind of in the Attitude Era. Just whether they were whether they were, you know, doing a tag team, you know, against the McMahons or what have you, or, you know, just like the kind of middle finger to the establishment, you know, especially me and my love for beer, like, gotta love the guy that's pounding beers and chugging them on out in the ring. That's incredibly exciting. And these, there's one on here that I'm gonna save. I'll save for last because he's undoubtedly like my favorite. This one will probably make a lot of people mad. Because
can I try to guess your favorite?
I'm not gonna have you guess my favorite. I'm just gonna go ahead and tell you this third one, then I'll have you guess my favorite. You know me well enough where you'll probably know. But my the third one I'm gonna go with Hogan, not because he was flashy, not because he was just a great wrestler. Because I think you watch some stuff, and he's certainly not as good as some of the guys out there now. But at the peak of wrestling, right? Like, there was no bigger name than Hulk Hogan. Everybody knew who he was. Everybody thought ripping the shirt off was the coolest thing. The dude was just a freak of nature, just absolutely massive. Played, I think, when he turned heel and became Hollywood, that is the greatest twist in the history of wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, just the black underbeard with the yellow mustache, the lightning pants. Bad Guy Hulk is maybe the most exciting wrestler of all time, just from him, the ultimate babyface, becoming the ultimate heel.
Yeah, I think it's hard to have a Mount Rushmore without Hulk Hogan, just because of how he carried it from the territory wrestling into the, you know, WrestleManias as we know it now, like filling Coliseum.
He literally carried, you know, at the time the WWF, and then he went along and carried WCW. So, like, to be able to say, you can say, hey, I had two major franchises like on my back. Like, he really did that. Tom, I'm interested to see who you're going to say who is my favorite wrestler of all time.
I feel like there's a lot of pressure now. After you said, oh yeah, I think it's Sting. I'm going to have to guess. That's if I had to guess, that's who I'd guess.
It's not even close.
Oh, and man.
Triple H.
Sting's up there, and it's definitely not Triple H.
Because I know how much you love Wolfpack Sting, too. That's why.
I did love Wolfpack Sting. Wolfpack Sting, Kevin Nash, Lex Luthor. That was like probably my favorite faction of WCW, just because they kind of broke away from, or my favorite faction of, you know, and they broke away from the NWO. So that was kind of like my favorite little group. But man, it's always going to be the wheeling, dealing, kiss stealing, jet flying, son of a gun. It's always going to be the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that. For some reason, I thought you had Sting over everybody.
Yeah.
Well, fun insight with Ric Flair too. My
uncle, yeah, I forgot about
name
that.
Also was Rick. Used to when Ric Flair owned Gold's Gym out in Charlotte, he worked for him. So going to see my uncle, there's a couple of times at the gym, Ric Flair was doing like autographs, and I just remember him being like just the nicest guy. And granted, you know, I was a kid at the time, you know, maybe 10. So I was kind of right in that perfect age to be a fan of wrestling. So I've got some Ric Flair autographs, you know, floating around. But the guy was just super cool. And like in a lot of ways, man, he's probably like the godfather of wrestling. He's probably maybe has the best catchphrase of all time, you know, like, Ric Flair's not even wrestling anymore, and you hear people at events going "woo!" Like it's just classic, timeless. So Ric Flair, to me, is probably my favorite all time.
Got his own. I had forgotten about your uncle's connection to Ric Flair, but yeah, I think, you know, two claps and a Ric Flair. You got the Ric Flair drip, you know, Migos song, and then.
He's still relevant culturally, and he's damn near 80 years old. Like it's.
Yeah,
the guy is just, he just had such a huge impact. He's helped bring a lot of people up along the way.
Oh, yeah.
And, then, you know, he's Richard Flair. Like, that's his birth name, but everybody knows that's not who he is. He's Ric Flair. Like, he literally is his wrestling persona. And
right.
Yeah.
That's not something you can say about all these guys.
Well, I'll tell you. Go ahead, Lee.
His gimmick. That's why he was so good. Was because he lived his gimmick. Everything he said, he did.
You always hear that the people that are the best characters are when it's themselves just elevated, like a more you know, larger-than-life version of who they actually are is what makes for a good character in wrestling.
Austin. Austin's a good
example. Right.
And I should note, I mean, a lot of people talk about his work in WWF, WWE. You can't overlook his work before that because he was one of the last wrestlers to come out of the territory days.
Right.
He started out in USWA or whatever World Class was after it got bought out by Jerry Jarrett, and he wrestled there for 2 years. Then he went to WCW. He did one hell of a job there, but he was heavily undervalued. Bischoff, you can blame Bischoff for that. He was undervalued. One hell of a wrestler. I mean, he went up against Steamboat. He went up against Flair. He was with the Hollywood Blondes with Brian Pillman. He was in the Dangerous Alliance with Paul Heyman's first when Paul Heyman was there. He was really good, and then tough luck, he got injured on a tour with New Japan, and Bischoff cut him via FedEx because Bischoff was apparently a bit of a coward. And within a day of getting fired, Paul Heyman called him and said, I'll pay you to come and shoot your crap. And Stone Cold was born in ECW. If you watch his promos from ECW, you can see the origins of Stone Cold Steve Austin. He was with ECW for only a few months and only did one match. But you watch his promos from there and you'll see the genesis of Stone Cold.
Yeah, have you seen his biography on?
Oh yeah,
yeah. So YouTube has a channel that has all those WWE biographies that they've done, and I watched Stone Cold not too long ago. Yeah, that's pretty cool to see. You know, and ECW was a good breeding ground for people to be able to, you know, bring that side of them out. As far as my Mount Rushmore, because I think there's two ways you look at this. So whenever I know you listen to the podcast, Andrews, but I don't know if you remember this episode where we talked about the best wrestler of all time, who we thought it was. I actually said I thought it was Ric Flair when you take into, you know, combination wrestling ability. You know, Ric Flair was definitely one of the best technical wrestlers, in my opinion, as far as, like, catchphrases on the mic. Obviously, he's one of the best at promos. And then, you know, longevity. Got to talk longevity when you talk GOAT because, you know, the longer you're great, the better it is. So, and Ric Flair has been doing it.
Yeah, but 15-year runs being completely dominant, like, factors in too.
So, here's what I say. I think you can't have a Mount Rushmore. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be somebody that's even older that's going to say, but I think it has to start with Hulk Hogan for sure. I think moving into Ric Flair is someone else that you have to have on there. And then to me, these last two spots are kind of where it can get tricky because, you know, you got so many. Stone Cold is obviously someone that saved WWE. Stone Cold and The Rock. I could see, you know, but I think Stone Cold was kind of like the first one. The Rock kind of came in with him. But like as a whole, those two. And then you have people like Shawn Michaels. Undertaker, you know, Undertaker is probably the best character ever as far as like,
for what it's worth, the guy that didn't make my Mount Rushmore, but was definitely five is the Undertaker.
Also the most loyal employee and also well-liked and was considered a locker room leader whenever there were issues that arose amongst the boys. He was the judge, jury, and executioner. The longevity and willing to change with the times. I mean, yeah, he's definitely a top dog.
Being able to go from dead man to the American badass is like,
oh yeah,
an incredible transformation. A lot of people can't pull off that big of a character change, and he took it with stride, and it just seemed completely normal and natural. And that's right. That's hard to do.
And so obviously you got those characters. Shawn Michaels, probably the best wrestler. You got Bret Hart, one of the most technical wrestlers of all time. Also kind of carried the, you know, WWE there for a little bit. Sting, who I brought up, you know, he's kind of been adding in there that longevity argument. But all these characters that we had growing up, and then moving from that, I don't know if you can have a Mount Rushmore without somebody like John Cena.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't really watch wrestling during John Cena's prime.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, he carried this, you know, PG era. And so right now I think, like, John Cena, and then call for what you want, Roman Reigns. In a few years, we might look back and say, man, Roman Reigns was carrying, you know, the WWE into whatever they're going into right now. And I think actually what The Rock is doing right now, if he stays, you know, with the company as far as on, you know, a part-time role where he just comes in and kind of like plays the, almost like the Vince McMahon, you know, because he's
on the board for TKO.
He's right, that's what I'm saying, yeah, because he's a board member.
I think he's doing a good job as a ways of helping transition. The direction they're going now is the best they have been in years. Because frankly, under McMahon, in recent history, it was the product was meh.
I've got a hot take, and you know, obviously, there's a lot that goes on to this, but I have this tendency to think with The Rock coming back and, you know, whatever's going on with McMahon and some of those allegations, I would not at all be surprised if there is some sort of buyout agreement arranged where The Rock ends up becoming the majority stakeholder in WWE. I mean, think about it. The guy already has his own production company. He's basically bought the XFL already, managed to combine it with the USFL to become the UFL, and they're basically already going to be kind of like serving as like a minor league to an extent to the NFL. The Rock is a businessman. He's made a ton of money, and I just see a world where with his creativity, his personality, obviously the guy still has an incredible physique. He's still a great athlete. He could probably potentially like keep this thing rolling for another 20 years. And like a lot of people said, like even people like me, I would say I'm an outsider to the wrestling community. I stopped really caring and being invested a long time ago, but I'm kind of bought back in now just because The Rock is such a big personality and his face is on everything. Right. I'm just saying I would not be surprised if that happens in the next, I don't know, I'm going to say 3 to 5 years.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is I think that what The Rock is doing right now, he could, if he keeps playing like this, I think that's something that could help put him into the no doubt about it Mount Rushmore. Because, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's definitely a very cloudy, you know, I think one or two spots on there. And to be someone that saved the company once, and then if you come back in and not even in your wrestling prime are able to help do it again, like, you know, I don't see how you can ignore that. What are you about to say, Lee?
So, Standards is definitely on point. The Rock, from a business standpoint, on the business side, would be a huge positive, but you also got overlook who's overseeing what you're actually seeing on TV. Triple H has been doing one heck of a job. He's been leading the charge, you know, doing the booking and all that stuff. He's been doing one heck of a job too. So you gotta give him some credit.
I'm not giving credit to whoever is currently the main decision maker. That's not kind of what I'm hitting at. The Triple H is as successful as he's been in wrestling. Like, the amount of money he has versus the amount of money The Rock has is not Triple H, and no way would be able to. The WWE would have to be given to him. And I just see a world where Brock just says, hey, look, I want majority share. I want final say. I want to be a part of the creative process. And he could just kind of be a yes, no guy. And let whatever everybody else is doing run the show, and then he can kind of interject as he needs to, because that's basically what he's done with his own movies and his own TV shows. And you call it what it is, they've all been great, whether they've been comedies, whether they've been action, whether they've just been dramas. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever really took the time, Tom, help me out here, that show on HBO, Ballers. Watch Ballers.
Oh, yeah, Ballers. Yeah, I love Ballers.
That's actually a really, really good sports drama, if you will. And I don't think it gets the credit it deserves. I found it quite enjoyable. But, like, you know, he's very well connected. And I don't know, man. I think he would probably be the person that could really kind of help right the ship. I know some wrestling fans are like, we're done with The Rock. We need new this. We need new that. There's a reason why the NFL, the NBA, there's a reason why they keep these legends around, because it helps give a pop to an audience maybe they lost.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep kind of referencing back to those guys. You help bring some of the old people back, and hopefully the new product is something they like, and they just continue to kind of roll with the current storylines and just keep watching.
If your knees crack when you stand up, you might be a fan of The Rock. You know what I'm saying? So, Well, real quick, I know we don't got too much time left, and before we leave, I have to get to this topic because it's kind of been sweeping the nation. It's kind of loops us back into college sports, but you know, I know we were talking about our group chat last night, but this Caitlin Clark phenomenon that is sweeping the nation. Do you think she is going to be helping women's sports become more relevant? Because I'm interested to see the numbers on that Iowa-LSU game. I really think it could be one of the most viewed games of the whole tournament, men and women's. What do y'all think about that?
Definitely.
I think so. But I would also kind of follow it up. America loves drama. And there's two figures that, let's just call it what it is, that are on both sides of the fence. You have the white girl that can shoot threes, and then you got the black girl that's an incredible athlete, right? So with what transpired last year, it's almost like this, you pick a side and then you want your side to win. And America, for whatever reason, loves that type of divisive battle. And I have no doubt that it'll be, I know from just watching on every sports network today, they're still talking about that game. Me personally, I'll just call it what it is. If you don't have that NC on your chest or on your helmet, I'm not watching. So I didn't watch many Duke games. I didn't watch many State games. I watched my Tar Heels. So have I watched the Lady Tar Heels? Absolutely, I have. Deja Kelly, Alyssa Usby, outstanding, incredible talents for my Lady Tar Heels. But from a standpoint of other college sports outside of North Carolina, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to.
Unless it's a national championship game like Butler versus Duke.
Yeah, we've grown from that. I no longer watch games so I can pull against rivals. I don't do that anymore.
So I got a question. I got asked. Well, I'm sure Standards has a strong opinion about this. Have you seen this on the news about Isaiah Thomas? Apparently, he's butthurt with Michael Jordan about something, and he's made the demands that I won't forgive him until he goes on international TV and apologizes. Frankly, Isaiah Thomas really has no business. I mean, shady individual, played with some shady individuals. I mean, you really think he's in any position to
I think to kind of stir it to what's kind of going on with the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese stuff, that, you know, that little rivalry. I think ultimately what happens is, no matter what rivalry you have, somebody emerges on top and overshines the other eventually. And I think as it relates to Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, you had Larry, Magic, Isaiah, like, they were the dominant teams in the NBA. You know, they beat up on like a young Michael. And I think the difference between that is, once Michael got to a point where he was able to win and kept winning, in a lot of ways, it diminished the shine of Isaiah Thomas. Because people forget, when Michael won his first championship, the Bad Boy Pistons were defending two times. Mm-hmm. They looked like they were going to be able to run the table for a little while because, you know, Larry and Magic were getting older, right? So I think when Michael came around, he kind of, in a way, made people forget, is maybe not a, maybe kind of a strong word, but it's the word I'm going to use, because I think people did forget how good those Detroit teams were, how good Isaiah Thomas was. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, what will happen in history with, as it pertains to, you know, Caitlin Clark and Iowa and LSU and Angel Reese, is if Caitlin Clark does not win the national title, you know, the reality is Angel Reese came out on top because she ultimately did get a ring. So I think at some point, to the victor goes the spoils. Not only who wins, but who wins the most sometimes can overshadow maybe how good somebody else also was. But their accomplishments simply just don't stack up at the end of the day.
Well, we're not getting it. We'll be here for another hour if we go down this rabbit hole.
No, we're not going down that rabbit hole. But you know, it's like the Michael LeBron thing. Like ultimately, it just kind of depends.
Real quick,
depends
that's on another area we've had a lot of growth in, Stan Drews.
Well, yeah, because again, like we had talked about with like Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, you end up on two sides. You know, it's one coin and there's two sides of it. It's like either you develop just overwhelmingly numbers. It's like Caitlin Clark saying she's the best ever. She hasn't won a title, right? You know, it's like Breanna Stewart. She's 4-for-4 for UConn.
Right.
You know, player of the year. And you're wanting to talk about Caitlin Clark just because she scored a ton of points. Don't get me wrong. Scoring is excellent. But stats without winning, to me, is like you're just out there being a cardio queen and out there just playing basketball. Like, if you're not winning, it doesn't amount to much.
Brandon Stewart did go to a much better program. Connecticut's much more developed.
Yeah,
as far as,
yeah, we're not having going through the ins and outs of it. I just think if you don't have a championship, you don't have a seat at the table. That's just what I'm kind of getting at. It's like I think if for some reason Caitlin Clark does win, I kind of lump her into the Tyler Hansbrough category for North Carolina, if you will. You were a part of great teams all 4 years. You won player of the year. You set all types of school and conference records, and you won a title your final year. That's an excellent, outstanding career that anybody would be proud of. But to say the best, ooh. I'm sorry, I'm just not buying that. I think it's, you know, again, the cross rivalries, I think Christian Laettner, as much as I hate Duke, is a better college basketball player than Tyler Hansbrough, because he mm-hmm. had all those things and he won two titles while he was at Duke back to back. You know, last time it hasn't happened since. I mean, I think it's going to happen this year. I think UConn's going to go back to back. But either way, like it's you can't sit here and try to act like just overwhelmingly scoring somehow overrides winning, because it doesn't. Like you got to have some hardware. If you have some hardware, we can take a deeper dive into
the. So what if she wins this year?
I still don't think that, because like you said, Brandon Stewart was just on a loaded team. If her team wasn't as good, she probably could have shot the ball that much and maybe scored that much. But when you're on a good team, you tend to let other people be great at whatever it is that they're great at. And so if you're on a team with other scorers, you're actually hurting the team by taking all the shots and not giving some of your other players the opportunity to be good.
All right. Yeah, I agree. Cause yep, it's definitely a part of it. But, all right, well, that's where we're going to leave it with. That's a good podcast. We appreciate you coming on, Big G. I know it's your debut on the Cinnamon and Sugar podcast over here. How do you think it went?
I think it went great, and I'm hoping that I know there are going to be some people who disagree with me on some stuff, definitely on some of the state AD stuff. I'm sure there are a few Todd Perry people who are like,
well, I can almost guarantee Big Gene, I can almost guarantee you don't have to worry about anybody disagreeing with you on the state AD stuff.
if we were the inside the NBA crew, I would definitely be the Charles Barkley of the group.
You are our encyclopedia that talks nonsense, I guess. Oh. I don't know if you want to be the Charles Barkley. That's pretty tough.
Hey, I mean, back in the
he could be the Charles Barkley because out of me and you, his team is the only one with no rings.
Oh, yay!
At least I always give y'all my honest opinion. I don't blow smoke up your rear end or sugarcoat it.
That's
true.
You ask
my honest opinion, you get it.
Yeah, that's true.
And hopefully I'm allowed to come back and share more opinions on stuff. Maybe next time we can talk about movies or music or whatnot.
We'll definitely bring you back, Gene. I know you're an encyclopedia of knowledge over there. But I appreciate y'all coming on and helping us carry out this week's podcast since the fellas decided they need to go on vacation this week. But
Can I interject?
Oh yeah, that's right. You got a bone to pick with D'Angelo real quick.
I do. Oh, boy. I do. Maybe 13 months ago, I got summoned to this podcast to talk about Carolina declining an invitation to the NIT. And I remember one D'Angelo Williams having some harsh words to me about my team quitting, about them quitting. They quit. They don't got no heart, right? But then his Memphis Tigers, they do the same thing this year.
Oh, boy.
And they ain't won anything. They've won nothing. Nothing. I think when you win nothing, you do not have the right to deny anything. You just take whatever you can get, baby. But yeah. when you got six of them things in the trophy case, you can elect to sit this one out. Yeah. I'm gonna end it with that.
Oh yeah. Basically, this sounds like Chris. No, never mind. I'm not gonna go there.
All right. Well, there's a little mic drop for Stan Drews to walk off the podcast. I'll make sure I clip that and send it to D for you. And we'll have to get you back on whenever we can get that interaction, because I know D's going to have a lot to say about that, because he always has a lot to say.
He always has a lot to say.
Until then, we'll be back next week with another episode of the Cinnamon Sugar Podcast. Meow!
Peace out!
You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage.